Welcome to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. To join the conversation, call 508-871-7000. Now, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
With 50,000 watts of political talk all across New England, you are tuned to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. He's Terry Hendricks, I'm John Featherston, and we're joined on the phone by media icon Lou Dobbs. You can see Mr. Dobbs every Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. on the Fox Business Network on Lou Dobbs Tonight. Mr. Dobbs, it's an honor to have you on All Politics is Local. Thank you for taking a few minutes.
Great to be with you.
So we wanted to get your opinion on the presidential race, and we'll just jump right in with that.
Well, it's without question the most interesting race, certainly of my lifetime, and it is pivotal, I think, for the country as to whether or not we're going to be a nation that succeeds or one that stays in, if you will, the stasis in which we've found ourselves over the last, I think, 30, just about 30 years. It is critically important for working men and women, for their families, for the middle class, and whether or not the very idea of the American dream survives.
You probably saw the Trump speech last Wednesday, and I was just absolutely positively astonished at how well that went. Anybody who doesn't think Donald Trump is presidential should listen to that speech, because I thought it was great. How about you?
Well, you know, I have to laugh a little bit, because here he is. He slows down his pace of speaking. He is reading teleprompter. He's getting plaudits. And here's a man who's a multi-billionaire who's built incredible buildings, an amazing business. He has accomplished so much. And we're now kind of applauding him for having organized his thoughts around a teleprompter. I mean, it's sort of where we are. I couldn't agree with you more. I thought it was a terrific speech. He laid out clearly that it's America first, that the nation is going to return to values of fidelity and courage in its foreign policy, but at the same time, modesty and constraint. I couldn't have asked for more as a man who considers himself a traditional conservative and a person who wants desperately for this country to return to a path that I think leads to the destiny that this nation's values were created to lead us to.
What are your thoughts? You have to assume now that Mr. Trump is going to get the nomination. It looks like the path. I mean, the only thing that might stop him is next week in Indiana. But, you know, assuming that there is a Clinton-Trump race for president, mm-hmm. and Hillary gets done coughing and yelling at us every time she speaks... What do you think the race will look like?
I think the race is going to look like precisely what the Hollywood elites, the left wing of the Democratic Party, envisions. I think Hillary Clinton is going to rise up as just a brilliant debater and crush Donald Trump beneath her almighty, all-knowing mind. I think he will just literally wipe the map with her. I think it will be a massive electoral victory. I think it will be a massive popular vote victory for Donald J. Trump. This is a man who is so underestimated, I can go through the list of what the national media has done here. These fools have no idea the talent, the energy, and the principle that he is bringing to this campaign. Here we are, 10 months into this race. He is just this close right now to winning the 1,237 delegates needed. And we have certain people in national media, particularly on left-wing radio, on left-wing columnists working for, you know, august organizations like, say, the Boston Globe or the New York Times or the Washington Post, and you notice how they form an axis right down the eastern seaboard to power. This is ridiculous. He's outworking every single candidate. Ted Cruz has proved himself to be an utter buffoon. I love the fact that John Boehner calls him Lucifer in the flesh. This is a man held in contempt by nearly every one of his contemporaries in the United States Senate. He is reviled in Washington. Normally, that would be a mark of high honor. But there are decent people there, and not one of them seems to be ready to stand up for Ted Cruz. I think that should tell people all that we really need to know about the man. He has changed his positions, and he is going to stand in Indiana. You mentioned last Wednesday, Donald Trump walks into Indiana at his side. Is it Governor Mike Pence? Is it any one of a number of people who have offered endorsements? No, it's Bobby Knight, who is a true legend, icon, and a beloved historical figure in basketball mad Indiana. And by the way, I happen to revere Bobby Knight as one of the greatest coaches. He's a good man. I've gotten to know him over the years. And Donald Trump couldn't have chosen a better ally to walk into that state where he already has an 8-point lead. And Cruz is walking around with Carly Fiorina now. They're in some sort of political hug that no one can explain. She got 2% of the vote. She is considered to be one of the nastiest CEOs in corporate history when it comes to outsourcing and offshoring of production. And he has chosen so well again. Every decision he's made has told us what a disaster he would be as a president were he elected.
Well, he couldn't even get it right. He called the basketball hoop a ring. I've never heard it called a ring, have you?
That 10-foot-high ring?
What's a ring toss or what? New game?
Hey, I'm glad you brought up the Northeast and the liberal media bias. You went to Harvard University, correct?
Yes, I did.
So you were educated in the
Minidoka County High School.
There you go. So you can appreciate the People's Republic of Cambridge better than most people. Terry and I are conservative Republican local elected officials and radio talk show hosts up in the Northeast. So a lot of times,
let me first say good for you and good for Boston and environs.
That is quite an honor to be endorsed by Lou Dobbs. That is quite an honor. But you can appreciate, how difficult it's to be a conservative Republican in Massachusetts. And what do you think the impact of Donald Trump at the top of the ticket is going to be for some of the down-the-ticket candidates? And candidly, and with full disclosure, I'm running for state rep in Massachusetts in this election cycle. What is Donald Trump going to help conservative Republican candidates, or will there be some opportunities?
I think that you're going to see to the coattails issue. You're going to see him develop a wingspan that's frankly unprecedented, at least since Reagan days. I think it may be, in fact, a historic sweep. This is a movement, and when I say a movement, I mean it is one that is populist, it is broad-based, it is rooted in dissatisfaction with the clumsy, hackneyed approach to politics that has become orthodoxy in Washington, D.C., frankly, on the parts of both parties. But the Republican Party has always had an opportunity that it has refused, and that is to be clear and to be explicit about the importance of small business, not big business, the importance of family values, not in a religious sense, but rather in a sociological sense, that is a direct relationship to the well-being of the middle class, working men and women and their families, and to pursue the policies and employ the rhetoric that exalts those conservatives and those goals. Those conservative principles. We talk about wave elections. I think this is going to be a tsunami election. And I believe that the Democrats are now only beginning to understand that. We're looking at 25 million votes cast in the Republican primaries. We have 10 to go. And the Republicans have already gathered 5 million votes, almost 5 million votes more than ever before in any primary season.
I know John and I attended a Trump event in the uh, DCU just a few miles down the road, and it literally filled to overflow. They had to stop accepting people because of time and fire codes.
Right.
And we were interviewing a few people in the audience, and the breadth of the people there, one memorable interview that we did was with a woman probably about 60, and she says, "I've been a Democrat all my life. I've been a union member for 40 years, and my family and I are all going to vote for Donald J. Trump." And just with so much energy, and you see that, and you go, and you hear about all the Democrats that are moving over to vote.
I covered as a pup. I wasn't a cub yet. I was a pup reporter in '76. Had the opportunity to cover him for a couple of months and travel with him a few times, and also cover the '76 convention. What I saw in 76 was an enthusiasm for the guy that was being described by the national liberal media at that time, a two-term governor of California. He did an incredible job as a governor. He was immensely popular, immensely successful. He was being described at that time as a two-bit B-movie actor who could barely perform, who had John Birch Society connections and had an itchy trigger finger, who we were going to put in charge of the national nuclear arsenal. I mean, they were trying scare tactics. They were demonizing him, marginalizing him. And it worked for just about 6 months. Unfortunately, it was 6 months that led up to the nomination of Gerald Ford. We've watched the same thing with Donald Trump. Only this man stands larger than media, and the national media refuses to acknowledge, and most people are not paying attention to the fact, this is a candidate who already, not even yet the nominee, even on my broadcast we call him the presumptive nominee, because we ran a poll, and for my audience, he is the presumptive nominee, and that's what we began calling him a week ago. He is bigger than the media. And we haven't had a candidate who could argue that he was bigger than the media since, for a period, Ronald Reagan himself. We're looking at a figure who I think possibly could rise to FDR levels in terms of his command of the national attention and affection.
You're listening to All Politics is Local here on WCRN 830. We're joined by Lou Dobbs of Lou Dobbs Tonight, seen every Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. on the Fox Business Network. Mr. Dobbs, I can't let you get away without asking you this question. College.
This is always the question I don't want to answer when a host says that.
Well, I've been watching you for years and respected your views on the economy, and I don't think I've ever disagreed with you over the years. And I think that's...
You know, may I say again what a pleasure it is to be talking with such an intelligent and clearly learned public servant.
Clearly.
Thank you so much. College student loan debt. I make the analogy often to that's Obamacare once again, because mm-hmm. I feel the government is loaning out this college loan money to these children and young adults, and because they want to control them down the line. I've got two teenage boys that are soon to go off to college, and I'm also a financial analyst for GM Financial. So I look at credit reports all day long. And I see the crippling, and those are my words, crippling student loan debts. And then I scroll down the credit report and see that these people with $180,000 worth of college loan debt working at Starbucks and Walmart, all honorable jobs, but there's no way these kids are ever going to be able to pay back those loans. And then I've got to sign off on a loan to give them an automobile, so they're never going to be able to buy a car. And is this by design, or is this just by the government not paying attention to what we're doing to the future generations?
There is nothing benign about student loan debt or the student loans or the system that was created under Obama to provide student loans at, frankly, historically high interest rates that create immense burdens in perpetuity for many of these young people. I think you're exactly right. People have to ask, I believe, first, who benefits from those student loans? It is certainly not a working family parent of these children who is then saddled with more debt than they would have otherwise ever assumed probably in their life beyond their mortgage. Secondly, the institution. the university, the college, that is providing what is at best a mediocre education and a minimal opportunity because of the quality of the teachers and professors who are working, they are selling, in my judgment, snake oil. Look at what these young people are having to do, where they're having to work. We have seen middle-class workers in this country, middle-class families, and those who aspire to the middle class, their wages have been stagnant after inflation for 30 years. You're a financial advisor. You know this. So why in the world have we tolerated institutions that are not required to talk about efficiency? I'm talking about the universities and colleges. They mm-hmm. never talk about their productivity, their efficiency, their government. By extension, if not in public university cases, in reality. The greatest private universities right now are using those student loans to, it is a left-wing support system for professors and assistant professors who are inculcating our young people, doctrinating our young people with the same philosophies that they hold, and you, to the exclusion of even, these universities will talk about diversity, but never diversity of intellectual thought, never diversity of political opinion or ideology. They are doctrinaire, they are orthodox, and they are perfectly willing to saddle the middle class or those who aspire to the middle class with all the debt it takes to support the livelihoods of those who are committed to the left. It's now manifesting itself as we see surveys of institution after institution. We're talking about 95% of the faculty being left wing, and the fact is those young people stepping out of those institutions are encountering an economy that is just at this point all but stagnant and offering very few jobs that would provide the kind of income necessary to support that debt.
Well, thank God there are some schools that are different. They have more conservative professors, more conservative leaders. One of those happens to be Babson College, which is my alumni from my MBA, and I still do some work there. But
you're right. I mean, there are frankly, it's a handful in the country, and people just have to understand. They want Johnny and Jill to go off to school and find that bright, shiny dream. But they have to look with clear eyes at what's going to be required of them. Here's what I tell parents who ask me about education, higher education, and debt. If the student does not have the talent to get a scholarship, if the student cannot bear on his or her own to carry the debt that will be created by going to that institution, that I have to beg them to go to a community college, go to a junior college. It's the best bargain in education.
Yep.
And we have to start looking at what is becoming, I think, an important trend, and that is online education. It's more efficient. It's more effective, and those who are motivated and can be self-starters and are disciplined enough to take advantage of this extraordinarily cheaper and more effective form of education, I think we're going to see a lot of improvement.
Well, yeah, it is time to have that change of paradigm in getting education, not just college, but I think even high school, more online courses.
Why in the world, I worked when I went to Harvard.
Yeah.
I made pretty good spending money, and I went to Harvard on scholarship. And I have to tell you, kids don't even think about having a job because we don't have jobs available to them. There are jobs, that Americans don't want because we need illegal immigrants. Part of the reason is our young people have the highest unemployment rates in post-war history. They don't work. It's not something for them, and we can't find enough small businesses to employ them, and big businesses simply won't. We have got to look at the consequences of the public policy choices we're making, whether it is in the case of President Obama, refusing to enforce immigration policy, whether it is the refusal to acknowledge that raising minimum wages to $15 an hour is an act of patriotism, in point of fact, because it rules so many young people out of the market.
Yeah. You know what McDonald's and Burger King and all these places, they're going to have more electronic kiosk. And
of course.
So let's say an average McDonald's employs 50 people. They're going to cut that number in half.
Yeah. And small businesses, frankly, some of them just simply will quit growing because they can't build up a labor force that is young and energetic and can do the jobs that make it possible to grow the business. I mean, it's, you know, certainly that's not the case universally.
Yeah,
but
now when
we
have
to look at the impact of public policy choices that we're making and business practices.
Yeah, well, what do you think about immigration? There, it's kind of a crazy deal. We're bringing in all these folks that I don't think will assimilate very well. And I think we're just creating problems by bringing in, I don't know how many people from Syria that just aren't coming here
right now.
Well, they're just not coming for the right reasons.
No, they're not. And why are they coming at all? Why is it the United States has to bring in refugees when, in fact, we could put together free zones in
yep.
Syria itself or nearby countries, build up refugee camps? Because this too shall pass. There will be a resolution in Syria, and it has been now 5 years of civil war. But why in the world is the United Nations not acting to resolve this issue? There are all of the cliches and hackneyed expressions that are spewed about the UN and its role in the world. It is a useless institution.
It's a waste of money.
And President Obama, this administration has done nothing to try to work toward a compromise and a settlement. Instead, he pursues moderate Syrians at this point, and he couldn't even identify the name of a single organization in Syria that would be a structure for moderates that can't even be defined, let alone found. And he dispatched two of the biggest, annoyances, I think, in modern politics, and that is Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, to go to see President Assisi after he had taken over, after Obama had had the sense to, the great judgment, to remove a 30-year friend of this country, Hosni Mubarak, and try to install the Muslim Brotherhood, for crying out loud, in the new government. This presidency, by the way, is going to go down as one of the most laughable and tragic in American history. It's stunning. When people step back and look at what he has done and not done, his legacy is going to be one of ineptitude and calamity.
I guess the good thing is our country is still strong enough to survive 8 years of this disastrous presidency.
Well, that would be the case if we hadn't had to survive as well 8 years of the Bush presidency.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
If we hadn't then had to survive 8 years of the Clinton presidency. You have to go back to George H.W. Bush to find a president who was even partially rational in foreign policy. We have George Bush was elected in 2000 because he was espousing a modest foreign policy. Circumstances, events intervened, and September 11th occurred.
Yes.
And there was no way to pursue a modest foreign policy. And Bush did the best as he possibly could have under the circumstances. But the result is we've been fighting for 15 years without victory in the Middle East. We have squandered $2 trillion, and we've lost thousands of young lives in the pursuit of a policy that no one could describe, in the pursuit of goals that no one has ever established. And it is a great tragedy in our period, and pursued by Barack Obama in ways that are utterly inexplicable.
Yeah, I remember Desert Storm and George H.W. Bush, and basically he had a set of goals. We're going to go this far, and when we reach that, we're done. And basically that's what happened.
And I covered the Persian Gulf War, and many people wanted to go on to Baghdad and to simply remove Saddam Hussein. And the argument is profound and frustrating, but ultimately, I think most people resolve that he chose correctly. His purpose was, and the United Nations Charter was, to remove Saddam Hussein from Kuwait, and our military did it brilliantly. It's a shame what has transpired since.
I couldn't agree with you more. Mr. Dobbs, thank you for taking a couple minutes. Everybody can hear why he's such a wonderful guest. It's an honor to have Lou Dobbs from Lou Dobbs Tonight on Fox Business join us. Hope you have a great weekend, Mr. Dobbs.
You too, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
All done.